Accession number 28645, Rule 15.
And now, Suzanne, you said that you went back to Egypt with Louis in June.
That's
so
right.
We were back for VJ Day.
We flew back from Lynham, and this time we had a Dakota. And it was a Dakota without any insides again. Absolutely none. We had a canvas seat to sit on, and that was it. You could see all its insides, all its insides and outsides and everything. It was just a model without any linings. There was my husband and myself, and I think we had a general and a colonel and one other. Don't know what rank the other one was. There were just the five of us again going back.
And within 3 months, with Louis, of course, having to...
Louis had to go for the official meetings.
He was peripatetic between...
Yes, we had VJ Day in Esmeralda. Somebody had brought my husband back a Nazi flag, a nice big one, so we spread that on the veranda and we danced on it. And we rustled up an orchestra, and I telephoned some people, because as soon as we heard, we telephoned as many people as we could and gathered everybody in our garden and celebrated. Broke out the champagne.
Quite right, too. And the following month, you leave for South Africa.
So that was VJ Day was
August. And September.
So I think my husband went off to Paris round about October, beginning of October, something like that. And so that was when I got my bright idea of going to South Africa. Can't think how I did all these things. One popped about in the most extraordinary fashion. Travelling didn't seem to be a problem. One said, I'm going to so-and-so, and one went to so-and-so, and I can't remember any of the machinations for getting a train ticket or anything like that. It was very simple. You just went up to a hole in the wall and you got a train ticket.
Now, before we stop for this afternoon, with you leaving for South Africa,
mm-hmm.
I want to ask you one question, one final question, that is this, about the wartime period and so on. In January of this year, you received your MBE, and you said to me when we first met that you liked to think it was for your work in Egypt, although your citation is for work to...
It's just for the arts.
Work for the arts and your...
There's no and.
There's no and?
No, just service to the arts.
Service to the arts. But you did say back in April that you were all March when we first met.
Well, that was my work during the war.
And that's what...
And my influence. After all, I must have had a fairly heavy influence on my husband, having just got married to him. It would make him pro-British anyway. So there was that as well as his own integrity. And I did a lot of work during the war to help. But what I really did, I saved hundreds of lives afterwards during the Troubles.
Oh, that's later, yes.
That's later. I saved the whole of the European population of Suez, Ismailia and Port Said. Because they were all on the list to be massacred. If I hadn't been there, they would have been.
Well, shall we? That's all in the future, because that's 1950.
Absolutely.
In the 50s. Shall we leave it there today?
Yes, indeed.
And tomorrow we'll pick it up with you on the boat.
Right.
Captain Brown.
Oh, yes, the journey to South Africa.
God intervening at all the appropriate moments.
And in his life, yes. He told me that he'd always helped him. When he was in trouble, he would just lay it on God and then put it aside and not worry about it. all came out well.
Well, shall we leave it there?
There's a lovely story. What is it? Mr. Weston's Good Wine, book that came out many years ago. Who was it by? There's some lovely stories in it, short stories. And there's one about the man who had faith in God. And it's a marvellous story about the way his faith worked. He found he got onto, there was a whole string of these faiths. But one was he got onto the wrong train in London and found that he was on a non-stopping train that didn't stop at his station. So he laid that one on God. So Gabriel was standing beside God and he said, I don't know what we're going to do about this because it's really very tricky. He's asked for the train to stop at his station, but if we stop the train at his station, we were going to have to do something really disastrous to stop it. And God said, well, he's got faith, we can't fail him. He's got faith. And Gabriel said, yeah, I know, Lord, we can't fail him. So there's an awful train crash before the station. And he gets out quite happily and unhurt, and the train, of course, is smashed. And a whole series of things that his faith does in the way of horrors by his having faith and altering things. Oh, Mr. Weston's Good Wine. I expect there's a copy in the house somewhere. It's a lovely book.
Shall we leave it there?
Mm.
Pick up South Africa tomorrow.
Yes.
Suzanne, just before we ultimately take the boat with Captain Brown to South Africa, which is where we left last time, and we were going to...
That was after the war.
That was after the war, and we were going to start there this afternoon. In fact, there are some extra points you'd like to talk about on your arrival in Egypt back in 37. I think there are points there that you want to start.
Yes, there was quite an interesting time at one moment. I arrived on the Egeo and we went to stay in the English Pension, which was run by an elderly lady who became a great friend of ours later. And during the troubles in Egypt, we rescued her and her pension, but that is for later. And we stayed there and looked for a flat, which we duly found, and moved into. And then there was the social life of which I've spoken, and our riding and polo, and of course there were a lot of military receptions and cocktail parties and such like, and it was a very social life. But then my mother was persuaded to come out and join us for a while. She was a very good tennis player and she spent a lot of time with the pro at the tennis club. And then one day we decided that she and I would go off to Cairo to have a look at Cairo. Seemed a good idea, so we did. We stayed at Shepherd's.
What was Shepherd's like?
Shepherd's was lovely.
It was a good quality. I mean, it lived up to its reputation.
Yes. I was going to stay in Shepherd's the night it was burnt down. It was cancelled at the last moment.
When was it burnt down?
During the troubles after the war.
Ah, all right.
Burnt down, the people were thrown out of the window, and they had their eyes torn out beforehand.
Well, we'll come to that.
And they left it. They left it as a burnt-out shell, apparently, because I had somebody who did a trip to Egypt, and they have it as a site now that they show visitors, which I think is rather disgusting, considering what happened there. Never mind, that was later on. Yes, so my mother and I set off for a week in Cairo, and we duly went into the bazaar, the Muski, as everyone did. Only we did it rather thoroughly, and we got very friendly with shopkeepers, and we drank coffee with them and discussed life with them. And There was one wonderful shop which sold perfumes. It's very interesting. The other night I was watching the television and there was a program on the perfume flowers that they grow in Egypt, and I had no idea about it. They grow acres and acres and acres of jasmine. Anyhow, there was this wonderful perfume shop with every perfume on earth, and it was kept by an extraordinary man. He was extremely good looking. He looked like a nice version of Mephistopheles. And he entertained us and gave us Turkish coffee, into which he put ambergris, which is supposed to be an aphrodisiac, but it didn't have the smallest effect on us. So it was a lot of money gone to waste because it's very expensive. Funny looking stuff. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. Never heard of it.
Haven't you?
Faith,
it comes from the brain of the whale. And
it comes from the brain of the whale?
I think it's the brain. I'm not quite sure which section it comes from, but I think it's a section of the brain of the whale, but I wouldn't be absolutely certain. You'd have to look it up in the dictionary. And it's called ambergris. And it's a sort of copper green colour. It's greenish, like copper when it's gone green. And it's sort of pasty. And they put the end of a matchstick worth into a cup of coffee, and it's supposed to make you very rabid, and it doesn't have any effect whatsoever. Anyhow, he entertained us to Turkish coffee. I don't know how much Turkish coffee we drank in those days. We did the whole bazaar. It was fascinating. And my mother and I both had the knack, the gift, the whatever, of sinking into our surroundings wherever we went. We didn't look like tourists. We didn't behave like tourists. We just sank into our surroundings, which meant we got an awful lot out of them. Anyhow, we used to sit in this. We always finished up in the perfume shop, trying out perfumes and so on. And this man came in, very smartly dressed, about 30-ish, I suppose, and apparently a friend of Mephistopheles. And we were introduced, and we got talking, and he asked us if we had anybody to show us Cairo, and we said no, we hadn't. We were just wandering round, so he offered his services, free and all, I mean, as a friend. Wasn't a guide. He was a gentleman of standing. Most extraordinary. So he said he would pick us up the next morning at Shepherd's, which he did.
At Shepherd's?
Yes, and he started to show us Cairo. And we went, I wish I could remember the name of the woman who had that dance hall and cabaret. She was somebody or other, mother somebody or other.
Khatun?
I wouldn't even know if that's right. But she had a most marvellous cabaret, and with the loveliest dancing girls in Cairo. And they were beautiful. Anyhow, we did that. Then we did the mosques, and we did the citadel. We did all the sights of Cairo. And then he said, now there's something you really must see. I've always said, what's that? He said, oh, well, it's a certain quarter of Cairo, and I think you should see it. So, innocence abroad, off we went. And we found ourselves in the red light quarter of Cairo. And it was absolutely fascinating. There were streets of little boutiques, each one with a spider sitting in it. And there was the 5 piastre road, and there was the 10 piastre road, and there was the pound road. So you could take your pick of how much you wanted to spend. And we walked down all these streets saying good evening to the ladies. The 5 piastre ladies were absolutely charming. They were really nice. The 10 piastre ladies weren't quite so nice. And the pound ladies were perfectly horrible. They sort of hissed at us. Didn't like us at all being there. So So we did that. And
a pound being an Egyptian pound.
Yes, which was equivalent to a British pound.
Was it?
Just about. A little bit less. And so we did that, and then he said we really must see the fighting. And they have these bouts of fighting with 6-foot-long staves. So we watched that, and they got very fierce. And finally they got so fierce, he said, I think we'd better move on. So we moved on, and what did we do next? We saw something else then, I can't remember what it was. We visited the whole quarter in detail. So that was that. And then he called for us another evening, and he said, now you've got to see the dervishes. So we said, oh yes. So he said, they're very interesting. So off we went, and we were the only women there because women weren't allowed. I don't know how he got us in. And there was a big arena, and people sitting round, almost like an opera house, as it were, not so big, and an arena with sand. And then these dervishes trooped in. And they were all dressed in white, and they all had coffee-coloured tarbooshes. Funnily enough, I saw one on the television the other night. It's the only time I've ever seen one since. They were this particular coffee colour. And they all trooped in, and the music started, and they started swaying and doing what they do, going round in circles and so on, and gradually working themselves up into an ecstatic state. Well, we were there, I suppose, about 2 hours while they were doing this, watching them, gradually getting more and more ecstatic. And then they started pushing swords through themselves, so we left. It made us feel sick, so we didn't wait for the end. But we did see it, and there's no blood. They stuck these things through themselves in a trance. But that was quite interesting, because I don't think many women see it. I don't know how he got us in. He did. He got us in all over Cairo. He was a very nice man. Pretty upright. Extraordinary. So we spent a week doing all sorts of things that would have raised my father's hair to the ceiling. And then we went back to normal life again. But he showed us all the mosques and explained them to us, and the beauties of Cairo, and of course the Cairo Museum. Incidentally, that is in a bad way. They're stealing things out of it and selling them. And they're also not preserving them well. Some of them are rotting. It's very sad.
Was that evident then as well?
No, not at that time. Since we left. And since we left, of course, Cairo is an abominable mess. I have a friend who was a member of my society I founded, and she had cancer, and it had been her dream since she was 7 years old to go to Egypt. So I said, all right, I'll take you, and I thought I'd better get her there before she died. She's still alive, incidentally. And so off we went to Egypt. So I saw it as it is. You see, that was in 92, I think, we went. And so I saw what had happened to him. It's very sad. Very sad indeed. Luxor is sad. The whole place is sad. Just a mess. And a very smelly mess at that. However, to return, so, and then we started our journeys to Luxor. My father and I went off with a couple of Air Force friends before my mother came out.
This would be when your father had some leave from the company?
That's right, yes, he took a few days leave and off we went.
And would you drive or take the train?
No, we went by train, overnight train.
From Cairo, all the way down the
From
Nile.
Cairo, yeah. Yes, you got a sleeper and you arrived very comfortably in Luxor the next morning.
And what sort of time of year? Did you avoid the summer?
Yes, we went about April. Oh yes, it wasn't a good thing to go in the summer. And we happened to employ the head guide. We were just lucky, we asked around and the hotel recommended him. And he was called Mohammed Aboudi. My mother wrote his biography. And his father was at the opening of the Tutankhamun tomb. And he was a very interesting man.
Carter and Carnarvon.
Yeah. He was a very interesting man. He for 13 years he was secretary to. Name's gone again. I had it a minute ago. One of the great songwriters.
Which nationality?
American.
Gershwin.
No. He was music. Bother. Anyhow, he was his secretary for 13 years. Oh, it'll come back to me. And there were extraordinary goings on in the life of this songwriter. When my mother wrote his biography, she refused to put this in. Otherwise the book would have sold like hot cakes.
But why did she refuse to put it in?
Because it was immoral.
And your mother was a good, upstanding...
My mother didn't like things that were immoral.
But happy to go to the red light district of Cairo?
Well, we were landed there. Yeah, it was a sort of a... It was a matter of interest. But she wouldn't have written it up for other people to, for their delectation. We regarded it as a branch of life, and it was interesting. We were taken anyway. We didn't judge it. But she wasn't going to make money out of writing dirt. And accusing a man who was dead anyway. So she wrote all the rest of his life. It's a very nice book. I must look out a copy for you.
I'd like to see it. Very much.
I think I have got a copy, I think, in the house. I'll give it to you next time you come.
Thank you.
It's a lovely book, and there's a wonderful description of his wedding and all that sort of thing. Anyhow, we employed him, and he became a close friend of the family. Every time we went to Luxor, he did things for us. And Luxor in those days, what a dream. There was a dirt track to the Valley of the Kings. There was a shack which was supposed to receive tourists, but there weren't any tourists. You took your own guide. You had an open old Ford car, probably one of the originals, I would think. I wore a veil the whole time to keep the dust out of my nose and mouth. And you could go by donkey if you wanted, but we decided to have the old Ford. And there was nobody there. It was absolutely wonderful. Wasn't a soul. Just the odd person wandering round. But there wasn't such a thing as a tourist. There were travellers. And there weren't many of them. Certainly not in April, because it wasn't... People will go to Egypt in summer. It's so silly. And we did all sides. And we tootled off to all the temples, took picnics with us. And
well, this is Karnak you're referring to, I suppose.
Oh, not just Karnak, Karnak, Dendera.
Oh, I see, the other temples on the Nile, not
Luxor. No, we did Luxor, of course, Luxor Temple and everything in Luxor.
Yes, but
and then there was the cataract, and then there was Abu Simbel.
Ah, yes, of course. That,
and
Abu that's why I asked about Dendera, because Dendera is well down the Nile from Luxor.
Yes, we did Dendera. And we just took the car each day and did another temple.